as believers, we have bought the world's definition of success, and we haven't evaluated it. So we've just taken it, and we haven't actually evaluated it to see, is that true? Is that what God says? Does it align with what God says? And if we do that, I think what we find is it does not.
Hmm. Did you find that your team was receptive to the idea of spiritual formation and spiritual direction coaching and all the things that came as you guys hit that crisis? Like, obviously,
Ben, it's a lot of just word of mouth, pastors or people who hear about something or find us online, and they already, you know, God has already started moving them toward a heart for people with disabilities, vulnerable people, marginalized people in their community.
It is, I would agree with this idea of someone working in challenging circumstances to focus on their own spiritual formation. And what does that look like practically? Because I think maybe we all recognize that it's important. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Kim Carbo. She's the founder and president of Accessible Hope International. Kim, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Accessible Hope and share your origin story, why you guys exist, how this whole thing gets started?
Sure. It's a long story, so I'll just give you the nutshell version, since that's not exactly what we're here to talk about. But Accessible Hope came about 15 years ago now, it's been a little over 15 years, in response to the fact that people with disabilities, generally speaking, are largely unreached by the gospel. So the disability community around the world is quite large, 1.3 billion people. So 16% of the world's population has a disability. The Lausanne movement has estimated that only about 5% of those have actually had access to the gospel, which leaves about 1.23 billion left that have not accessed the gospel at all. And what that, the reasons for that is because of the barriers that exist within the communities where they live. And these are not the barriers you would think of, like ramps or accessibility features and things like that. It's more attitudes and thought processes and worldviews around disability. That's the biggest barrier that people with disabilities face to accessing anything in community, let alone the gospel. And so not only are they banned and excluded from really just all aspects of communal living, but also church. And so that then really gives them no access to the gospel. So that's the sort of big picture, what started Accessible Hope. There's a lot of sort of specifics about Accessible Hope in specific and how we got started in Sierra Leone, which was a response to, really for me, a request from a friend that I had known from another ministry that I worked with some time back, to act as a consultant for a group of people that wanted to see about what might God want to do among women with disabilities in Sierra Leone. So I met with that group of people as a consultant, and I thought that was going to be the end of that story for me. And I would just sort of be available if they had questions or whatever. And here we are 15 years later. So it was definitely not God's plan that it was going to be a one-off sort of thing. But that was kind of how it started. And as we started to pursue doing more assessment and figuring out what were the needs, what was already in place that was ministering to people with disabilities in Sierra Leone, we realized there was really nothing and the needs were great. And so the ministry has evolved quite a bit since then, but that was kind of where we started.
Hmm. Now, have you guys branched beyond Sierra Leone?
Yes. So we worked in Sierra Leone exclusively for about the first 8-9 years, and then really started doing a lot of education with churches around the world around a theology of disability. And that's one of our largest programs now, is our theology of disability, our EQUIP program, equipping the global church. So we do work, we have partnerships that work directly with people with disabilities. So the one in Sierra Leone exclusively focuses on women with disabilities. We have about 800 women in that program. And then we have another partnership in Sierra Leone, in the a different area of Sierra Leone, that's a school for kids with disabilities. They have about 120 kids in their program. Not all of them are in school physically, but they have those children in their program, and they a lot of them are not able to even get to the school, so they do home visiting. And then we also partner with this, another school with for kids with disabilities in Tanzania as well. And then beyond that, then we do our theology of disability training globally with church and ministry leaders all over the world.
Okay. Do you do a lot of that training through relationships and networking inside of ministries connected to Luzon movement?
Yes, and other. So not all ministries are connected with Luzon, but many have been. It's a lot of just word of mouth, pastors or people who hear about something or find us online, and they already, you know, God has already started moving them toward a heart for people with disabilities, vulnerable people, marginalized people in their community. And so they reach out, and then it's usually a very long process of communication before we actually set up a training and go and do the training in their country. And you know, we also require collaboration on that. So they have to partner with other ministry organizations in their country too, so that the, they sort of spread out the impact, you know, where there's multiple ministries, engaged in that particular training.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get into the topic of today. We're going to talk about something else other than that, but, talking about spiritual health of ministry leaders and your experience, how can someone maintain spiritual health when working in high pressure or difficult environments where the demands feel unrelenting? And what has been your experience at running and leading a ministry like Accessible Hope that has maybe gotten you interested in this topic?
Well, it's a very multifaceted answer, but I'm gonna try to hone in on just a couple facets for you. The first thing, I think, let me answer the second part first. What got us interested in that? Working among vulnerable and marginalized populations is really hard work. It's very challenging. I've told people when I do presentations, you know, when we read things like Isaiah 61 about setting captives free and things like that, that sounds so romantic almost, you know, sort of Rambo-esque, you know, like running in and opening up doors and out comes all the prisoners. And the problem with releasing captives is that people who are captives because there's a captor, right? And so people who are really held in captivity of spiritual captivity, or maybe even in our case, physical captivity, because a lot of people with disabilities really are captives in their homes or in other places where their family has placed them to keep them out of the public eye. And when you go in to release captives that have a captor, they're there for a reason. Nobody wants them out, right? And so there's a lot of sort of resistance to the release of people who have been held captive by whether it's the enemy that's holding them captive or other humans. And so it's not quite as romantic as it sounds. And so in those difficult spaces where you're working with a lot of resistance and with a very marginalized population, it's hard, and it can take a toll on your soul. So you also said something in that question, where the demands feel unrelenting. And I think that's what I would start with, is that the demands of a broken world are unrelenting. They don't just feel unrelenting. They really are. And it's not our job to fix them all at once, because we are called to participate in the ministry of reconciliation, reconciling all things back to God. But that's not going to be accomplished until the new earth. And so I think we have to keep in mind that the demands are unrelenting, and they will always be unrelenting. And so it's up to us then to be relentless in our intentions in that space. I think part of that is making spiritual formation not just a priority, but making it part of the strategy of the ministry. Establishing really solid rhythms or a rule of life that are going to protect our soul and the souls of those that are working with us and those that we serve, and that allow us to flourish. And then really using a lot of discernment to ask, especially like for an individual to ask, what is God actually asking me to do? Right? Like there, your task list could be, you know, several pages long, but what is actually mm-hmm. God asking you to do off of that task list for the day? It probably isn't the whole thing. And so, you know, really using discernment in our day to day of what is the thing that God is asking of me today. And God doesn't overextend us into burnout. Like that's not God's plan. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to be very careful that we put some parameters around that and really ask God, what are your intentions for me today? Not what is my list say that I'm supposed to do? Mm.
Yeah. Going in with some, a sense of reality as to the reality of the broken world that we live in, and understanding that, like you said, it's not going away until he comes again.
Right.
Do you find that particularly within the ministry leader world, mm-hmm. whether that's pastors or leaders of parachurch organizations, that the driving force behind a lot of this is this performance-based, like I've got to constantly succeed. And so therefore I have to show that I'm constantly checking this task list off. And that's where we start to pile these things on ourselves rather than, like you said, what is God actually asking me to do today?
Yeah, it is. I think in general, we have, as believers, we have bought the world's definition of success and we haven't evaluated it. So we've just taken it and mm-hmm. we haven't actually evaluated it to see, is that true? Is that what God says? Does it align with what God says? And if we do that, I think what we find is it does not. You know, even just looking at Jesus, if you evaluated Jesus's ministry based on any sort of ministry growth standards or success standards today, he would definitely come up wanting. I mean, I don't think he would ever get a grant, you know, if he wrote a proposal. Like, I just think that there was nothing from a worldly sort of standards framework that his ministry fit, you know? And so we're afraid to really, I think, take a look at that and say, well, what does this mean then? What do I need to do? What does my ministry need to look like? So I do think that it is largely due to sort of the lie that we've bought from the world that success has a certain definition, and we haven't actually evaluated the scripture to ask God, what do you value as successful?
Hmm. Now, in your last answer, you talked about the importance of spiritual formation and what that looks like mm-hmm. to create healthy rhythms and healthy practices for ministry leaders. Let's talk about how important you think it is. I would agree with this idea of someone working in challenging circumstances to focus on their own spiritual formation. And what does that look like practically? Because I think maybe we all recognize that it's important, mm-hmm. but when it comes to actually putting some of these things into practice, in a world, in a cult ministry culture where, like we talked about, the performance piece is so ingrained in how ministry culture functions, what are some things that we can do to make sure that we're spiritually healthy and being spiritually formed at a deep level?
Mm-hmm. I think really it has to be on two pathways. The first one is individually, because, you know, ultimately it is, we need to make sure that our souls are being nurtured and fed and protected. And so we need to set sort of our own intentions around our own formation. But then I think as leaders, and I think specifically speaking into the leadership space, it is, I think, imperative that we as leaders start to understand how to set up our ministries and our teams with a bent toward formation, right? That would be sort of the underpinning of everything that we do. that that formation would be integrated into every aspect of what we do, into our strategic planning, into our budgets, into our calendars, in any aspect of ministry and the way that we go about operating those ministries, I think we've got to begin asking, how do I make sure that formation is integral in all of that? And then walking that out. And it does take some real, intentionality, yes, but it also takes some reevaluating, because if you're going to really say that you value formation, you're going to need to put budget line items toward it. We pay for what we value, right? So if we say that we value formation, are we paying for formation? Are we making sure that that's something that we're actually putting funding toward? If not, then I would venture to say that we don't value formation if we're not putting any funding toward it. We're going to have to make sure that we allocate time for that, because we can't just sort of hope that formation happens in the busyness of our work days, right? We've got to make space for it. We've got to make intentional times for that. And then we also need to train for it. We train our staff and our teams on whatever it is that they need to do their job well, right? If somebody needs to learn a new software program, we're going to send them to a training on that. If we have a new development director and we want them to start networking with other development professionals, we're going to send them to a conference and pay for that, right? And we're going to make time for them to go do that and get training on that. But we're going to have to also train our staff to start thinking differently about their own formation and to start allocating their own time differently, even in their, as they said, about their personal days. But it has to be led by the leader of the team or the organization. And the expectation has to be put in place. And then there have to be sort of support structures around that within the ministry that will actually allow that to happen. Otherwise, it will get sidelined and it'll be the first to go. So, you know, you talk about just what it looks like in practical terms. I mean, well, I think it would look different in different ministries. So every ministry, so for example, our ministry is, we're a distributed team. So we don't have a physical office in the United States. And we, all of our people, we meet and live in different states, and then we work virtually. That's a whole different process of finding ways to integrate formation than it would be if you sort of had an office building and you were all together every day, right? You would maybe have different rhythms in that sort of situation. So it really is very dependent on what the type of ministry is, what their circumstances are. Are they global? Are they local? Do people travel a lot? There's a lot of pieces that would go into what does that need to look like. So I can't give any particulars on how, what the practical aspects of that would be for every ministry. But I do think that for leadership, and I've thought about this a lot just in terms of my own leadership. For me, I'll just say this, that part of my journey in this was being driven enough that I burned out and I burned out my staff. And we sort of came to a screeching halt in crisis, right? Where there were both internal and external crises that all sort of happened at the same time. And it led to a complete ministry crisis. By God's grace, God stepped in and saved us from ourselves and healed us. And from that, then we started a journey into a whole different way of being in ministry and a whole different way of doing ministry. And that's been, that'll be an ongoing journey. I don't think that's something that you ever finish doing. But yeah. I think hard questions have to be asked. When we realized where we were and the crisis that had ensued, and then realized where we wanted to be, it took some real hard decisions of what we were no longer going to do and what we were going to do to sort of start us on a new trajectory. And I have sort of boiled it down, you know, out of all the, there's so many spiritual practices and different ways of thinking about formation. But for leadership in particular, I think there are five practices that are critical to every leader. And I'll just tell you what those five are, but I'll tell you just real briefly why I think that one is critical out of all the different practices that are available. One is silence. I think leaders have got to be practicing intentional silence with the Lord. Our worlds are very noisy, and we're listening to people and things all the time. You know, whether it's podcasts, sorry, no shade on podcasts. I listen to podcasts all the time, podcasts or sermons or books that we're reading. You know, we're taking in information constantly, and there's a lot of voices speaking to us. But how much time are we taking to just be silent and still and let the Spirit speak to us as leaders? You know, and I think that's crucial for the life of a leader. Another one is spiritual direction. I have found spiritual direction to be an invaluable practice for myself, but also because we find it so valuable, and this is another example of kind of how you've got to put your money where your mouth is. We pay for spiritual direction for all of our team members because we feel like it's that critical. And so everybody has monthly spiritual direction sessions. They choose their own spiritual director. We can help them find one if they don't have one, but they find their own, and then we pay for that. So I think spiritual direction, because that's a place, it's a safe space where a leader can go to process like what they're struggling with, what they're dealing with, what are they, what's the Lord speaking to them about, to help them listen to the Lord. In full disclosure, I am a spiritual director. I'm not a spiritual director for any of my team, but I am a spiritual director. And I think that has also helped me to see the value of that and how that is really critical to listening better to the Spirit. Sabbath, I think, is the third one, especially in today's world and especially in a virtual team, even more so than a physical team, where at least you're leaving a space and going to a different space. If you're working from home, you're just kind of always at work, right? Like, or it could be. And so it's really important to be intentional about Sabbath and stepping away from our work for 24 hours every 7 days. And then in line with that, also taking sabbaticals, intentional sabbaticals, not sabbatical to treat a burnout, but sabbatical to keep your soul healthy and to prevent burnout. So that's the first three. And then the fourth one is retreats. I think retreats are really critical to leaders as well, to get away and just spend a couple of days really leaning in and listening to the Lord and getting some renewal for your soul. And then the last one is the practice of examine or self-examination, because, I mean, obviously we don't have to, all I have to say is lots of leaders fall and everybody can just like pull, you know, five or six names off the top of their head.
Right.
Leaders are in places of huge temptation. The temptation of power, I think, is the worst, because I think that's the first step toward the fall that we've seen in over and over and over again. And I think the practice of examine and self-examination is critical to leadership, to maintain humility, to be able to critically look at where am I failing to listen to the Spirit? Where am I failing to walk in line with what Jesus would want me to do? And to be very honest about that, and then be able to see that, accept it, confess, and receive forgiveness and move into another space, you know? So I think those are the five practices that for me have really been critical to healthy leadership after a period of very unhealthy leadership earlier.
Did you find that your team was receptive to the idea of spiritual formation and spiritual direction, coaching, and all the things that came as you guys hit that crisis? Like, obviously you got to the point where probably all realize something's got to change, yeah. But was the team receptive to it?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I wouldn't say 100%. I think even just spiritual formation in general is it depends on sort of which circles you walk in, right? So there's sort of circles that are all into the spiritual formation, everything, right? And then there are circles that are like, whoa. So I think it really depends a lot on your circles and where you find yourself in your spiritual communities. But for the most part, for my team, everybody was very much on board. And it was because we all knew that we were in a really vulnerable and not a great space, right? And so We were kind of like the person that's dying and somebody's like, hey, this is the cure. And you're like, I mean, I don't know what this is, but sure, I'll just, you know, I'll try anything right now. And so anything, I think we were, you know, we were that desperate at that time. And so out of desperation, you know, we just grabbed onto the thing that felt like a lifeboat at that time. And it was. And so since then, since that is now our culture, and it's extremely integrated into everything that we do, whenever we have new team members that come on board, we're very upfront with them in the interview process, right? Like, this is who we are. This is what we are. This is what we do. This is not everybody's cup of tea. So if it's not yours, this is probably not the ministry for you, right? And so we really kind of feel that out during the interview process to make sure that people are aligned from a culture perspective with us.
Based on your experience, are you now consulting with other ministries on this stuff?
So I am actually, it's funny that you should ask that. I'm actually just in conversation right now with a web developer to get my website set up, because I have done some consulting and some retreats for ministry leaders around some of these issues. But I don't really have a space yet where people can like find that. But I actually have just been in conversation with a web developer to get a website set up so that there is a sort of landing place for people to find that. But yes, to answer your question simply.
And the reason I ask that is I just wonder how, like, obviously your team hit a crisis point, and so the reception to this was positive. How have you found reception to spiritual formation and spiritual direction from other ministry leaders to be difficult? Or have you found that most people you're talking to about this, there is reception to it? They are interested in it. They do see the value in it. Like, again, obviously it probably depends on the circles in which you're talking, but and engaging with.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a mixed bag, I would say. And I think language matters too. So, you know, some people are in their language are talking about spiritual formation. Other people are talking about soul care, right? Which I don't know, for some reason tends to hit people better for some reason. So soul care in the ministry space is something that lots of people are talking about. And that is sort of under the member care umbrella, right? So if you're in a ministry space and you've got a member care department, they're all into the soul care aspects of things, right? So it really depends, size of ministry. And also I think desperation is a factor, right? So if people are walking through seasons of ministry where we're like, this is not tenable, right? I can't keep doing this. They're going to be at least curious, if not interested, about, is there a different way that I can do this? And I think there's no one different way. There is a different way, but it doesn't look the same for everybody. And so there's so many different ways that you could come alongside a leader in their ministry and start to ask some questions and see what is working, what's not working, and how could some different ways of being in ministry really support the fruit that you're trying to see.
Do you find that, I kind of wonder this, I've this idea, so whether you call it soul care or spiritual formation, doesn't matter.
Right.
We've done some, a handful of projects with ministries in the parachurch space that are maybe recently moving into some of these directions, like starting to incorporate spiritual formation into the leadership development process and the staffing, all the things that go with leading organization. Yeah. So I'm seeing it on the parachurch side, but I wonder if you've seen on the local church level, is this something that's being taken seriously, or has it not bled into that area yet? Like,
so when you say that, are you referring to sort of Great Commission community,
like local church staff,
local church in the global space?
Yeah.
Yes. So that is a passion of mine, and I'll tell you why. Because I work overseas, and I've lived about 40 years in Sierra Leone, West Africa. So that was, I didn't put that in the origin story, but that was how I was called on to consult with the group that wanted to do something in Sierra Leone. Because Sierra Leone is a country I've lived in and worked in for many, many years. One of my passions is finding ways to help. So in our ministry with our team in Sierra Leone, so we have an office in Sierra Leone and a program in Sierra Leone, and we have really leaned into a lot of this formation conversation with our team in Sierra Leone. Does it need to be contextualized? Yeah, a little bit, but not a lot. I mean, I think spiritual formation and spiritual practices, even for us as Westerners, like there is a Western bent to it because it kind of came out of the, you know, sort of European monastic traditions. So there is sort of a Western bent, but it's so ancient that, you know, it's not sort of modern Western. And so even for us, there is a culture shift, you know, the translation that needs to take place for us to really lean into some of those spaces. Here's an obvious example. Taking time to sit in silence is extraordinarily countercultural for our culture, right? We just don't do that. We have noise all the time from everything, right? Screens and all kinds of recordings and
constantly filling the gaps.
Yeah. And we don't like silence, in fact, you know, so if we have a moment of silence waiting in a waiting room at a doctor's office or whatever, what do we do? Right. We just pull out our phone and start filling it. We don't want silence. We got to have something coming into our heads. So sitting in silence is one example of how, even for us as, you know, Western leaders, there has to be some sort of cross-cultural, translation of this and acceptance of trying something that's quite different and quite countercultural. But we could also ask ourselves, but is this working for us, right? Like, do we feel like this is, like, our souls are healthy in this space that we've created for ourselves? Probably most of us are going to say, not really. But then are we committed enough to something different to give up some things and to try something new? And so even in the global church setting, I think there's also some of that same thing. Sometimes resistance, sometimes it's not even resistance. It's just like, I've never even thought of this before. I've never heard of this before. Or how could I possibly sit in silence? We live outside and the place is noisy. Yeah, that's true. I get that. So, you know, we've really sort of spent time talking and leaning in with our staff there on what would this look like in your setting, and had some contemplative retreats with them that have really been just really life-giving. So I am really passionate about look behind me, right? Like, we've got books, we've got podcasts, we've got all kinds of resources on formation at the tip of our fingers. The global church doesn't have as much of that. If they're extremely connected, yes, maybe through, you know, Kindle or whatever books, but not nearly as much as what we have just at our fingertips all the time. And so I really have a passion for trying to make that available and helping people contextualize that with their global partners, if they're a global ministry like we are, to see how it would be integrated, not just for their US-based office, but for their entire ministry across the globe. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some really beautiful ways that that can happen with intentionality.
Yeah. Can you explain this concept? We talked about offline a little bit, of working from an overflow of your own formation in Christ, and how does this principle kind of help sustain us in the tough things in ministry, especially in situations like where you find yourself working, where it probably is, and a lot of other ministry leaders find themselves working in where there's either large C or large T, small T traumas on an ongoing and consistent basis that you're dealing with, or at least being presented with, that you're facing on an ongoing basis with the people that you might be serving.
Right.
How does that overflow of your own formation impact things downstream?
Yeah. I'll just really very simply, and this is, you know, not an unfamiliar analogy, but we're in ministry as leaders, we're always pouring out, right? We're constantly pouring out into other people. And like a pitcher or a cup, we can only pour out whatever's in there, right? And so what we do though, is that we tend to just keep pouring even after it's empty, and we just don't take time to be refilled. And so leaving the pitcher and the cup analogy, I'd like to move to an engine analogy, because I think that works better, right? That an engine needs oil to continue to operate. And if your oil, if you have a leak and your oil is slowly leaking away, and you can kind of keep pushing through for a while, you might get a little alarm light and you'll be like, oh shoot, I need to do something about that or whatever. And you can keep pushing through, but eventually, and you can even fool people, because your car might actually look like it's going just fine, right? For a while, but eventually your engine will seize, and the recovery from a seized engine is really challenging at best, you know, if it's possible, right? So to rebuild the engine is extremely challenging. To buy a whole new engine, also very challenging. So whatever the situation is, once the engine has seized, which is what's going to happen to us as leaders too. And that's, you know, that'll take different sort of pictures. It'll look different in different people. But once the engine has seized, then the recovery and the coming back from that is really challenging. But if we can continue to allow ourselves to be filled and to be poured into by the Spirit, by others, by the community around us, you know, that'll prevent that seized engine problem. So I think for me, that's the way that I kind of envision it, because that's the danger. And also it's a relatively simple, but it does take intentionality. Like if your oil's low and you just are like, I'm too busy to go get that filled up, you know, or go get my oil changed or figure out why it's leaking, I just don't have time for that. Like that's what we do to ourselves with our spiritual lives, right? We're just like, I don't have time for that. That's going to take time. I don't really even know exactly what to do. I don't know where to go, or it's going to cost some money or whatever. And we just don't do it. And then eventually we pay the price for it.
Yeah. On what you said in there, I think is super important, and maybe you can expand on this, but this idea of how critical the role of community is in all of this. Like, I think that there's a tendency, it happens with, I've experienced this, it happens with ministry leaders that I talk to, but there's a loneliness and isolation to ministry leadership. And so what does it look like to go through this process, maybe take spiritual formation seriously, understanding that it is most effective inside of community? And what does that look like?
I've joked before that I feel like ministry leaders need some sort of a 12-step program, because, you know, it's such a safe place where people are just authentic and they are loved where they are, you know, celebrated for whatever little step of forward movement they have. And I feel like ministry leaders need that too. But yes, I think community is really important, but not just any community, because I think here's the thing. I think a lot of ministry leaders, they have a church, right? They're in a local church. They go to church most Sundays. Maybe they're even in a small group and they, you know, are interacting with a small group around Bible study or whatever it is. They have a team, right? That they might even have some very close relationships in, right? So they're like, yeah, I'm in community. Like that's what I'm doing. But I think we have to think of it a little bit differently in terms of sort of what is the kind of community that's necessary for our spiritual vitality. Those are important. Like being in a spiritual community, like church, a local church, is very important. Being in some sort of small group where you're actually fellowshipping with people is very important. Having a healthy team, super important. But I think for leaders in particular, there's got to be something that's a little bit different, that is that we can cultivate a space where it's where you can be, you can feel safe, where you can be authentic, which is risky. And that you can trust other people. And then in that kind of community, find a space where you can say, hey, this is not going well for me, and I'm not sure what to do next, you know? And I think a lot of times, well, not a lot. I think sometimes leaders will sort of find that in, you know, like they'll find a therapist or, you know, a spiritual director, but it's still just me, right? I'm just still doing the thing by myself. And I'm just processing with an individual who's not necessarily in my community, is outside of my community. And so I think, I wish, I dream of the day when leaders would find the guts to create communities that are safe like that and could be that where they can be vulnerable. Because I think that's where we're going to see the church begin to explode. And I don't think we've found that yet. Now, there are exceptions to that. I know that there are some people that have community, but I think by and large, leaders, like you said, feel lonely, feel isolated. I'll just give you a quick example. We recently came through a very horribly challenging season with our ministry partners in Sierra Leone, where there was some people that we trusted very deeply who were robbing us blind, essentially. Like, there was just massive embezzlement, abuse of power, sexual abuse in the office, like all kinds of abuse taking place that was just so deeply hidden and so damaging. And when we finally found it, I mean, it was extremely traumatic for everybody, you know, it created a huge disruption. And we actually went to a crisis, an organization that does crisis counseling with ministries, particularly those that work globally. And the guy said to us, this is a guy that's like, I don't know, he's probably 75, 80 years old, had worked in West Africa for like, I don't know, 40 years or something. And he goes, listen, you are not alone. Every ministry that is working globally right now has either had this experience, is currently having this experience, but doesn't know it yet, or is about to have this experience. You are not alone. And we were like, okay, there's some comfort in that. Also, that just infuriates me because, like, wait a minute, I'm in all kinds of ministry circles. Like, why can't we talk about this? Right? Like, if we're not alone and everyone else is also experiencing things that are this hard, like us, why don't I know that? Why can't we talk about these things? Well, and then I started evaluating my own self. Well, I'm not going to talk about that. You know what I mean? You got, well, what are the donors going to think? You know, people just embezzled their money. And what are, you know, what are people going to think about the way that we're doing partnership? And, you know, there are all these, like, what will people think? Right? I mean, that's really the bottom line. What will people think? And so here we all are experiencing similar crises, similar traumas, and keeping it very close so that nobody else knows. And here's this guy who, like, this is the guy that gets called for all these crises. And he's like, listen, I do this all day, every day. Like, there are thousands of ministry leaders out there that are going through exactly what you're going through, just like this. And I'm like, that's tragic, right? I mean, it's tragic that it's happening, but it's also tragic that we don't know. And that we're all just thinking we're alone in this, you know? So I don't know, at some point, maybe that'll be my next ministry as a 12-step program for ministry leaders. We'll see.
I've got a buddy of mine that jokes fairly regularly that discipleship looks a lot more like AA than anything else.
Yes. So true.
But I mean, to your point, I think the piece that is hard about all of this is it requires vulnerability, like, and specifically vulnerability inside of community.
Yeah.
And if we don't have safe spaces like that where we can be vulnerable, and that requires significant amounts of time to develop those safe spaces, if you're even willing to go through the process of that, like, let alone getting into that relationship. Right. So the vulnerability piece is the same thing. The same commonality I see in the storytelling space. We're trying to constantly get and guide ministry leaders that we come alongside and work with to take seriously story. Yeah. And it's application for everything in ministry, particularly in marketing and communications, but it runs the gamut of application for where it can be applied in ministry. And it is next to impossible. And the reason, I think, is because it comes down to vulnerability.
Yeah.
When you're asking somebody to testify of what God is doing, you're asking them to share open and honestly the deepest, darkest depths of their depravity and where Jesus stepped into my life to meet me where I was, to walk me and guide me out of that. That requires me to be vulnerable and honest and transparent about where I was and where he's met me and where he's leading me out of and what he's leading me into.
Yes.
It requires a level of vulnerability that is unbelievably uncomfortable.
And you know,
to create those spaces, those safe spaces where we can be vulnerable is difficult. It takes effort.
And I think that we, well, maybe we don't all know this, but I think a lot of us do know that the truth is that our vulnerability is actually our greatest strength. That when somebody is vulnerable with you, your heart just opens.
That's where those, that's the deepest relationships that we have.
Exactly.
The places where I can be the most vulnerable, the places where I feel the most safe are my most intimate relationships, right? The more the more vulnerable I am with my wife, the deeper my relationship goes with my wife.
Yeah.
The same thing goes with
exactly
all of our relationships. Right. But, you know, we can know that in our head.
Right.
But when it comes down to applying it and knowing it in our heart is something altogether different, just like everything else.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, Kim, I want to make sure that we take a moment for today's sponsor. When we come back, I want to continue this discussion and hear more about what you guys are doing at Accessible Hope International. Hey, ministry leaders. Today's episode is sponsored by Click Nonprofit. Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money or marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results page and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and then manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Growth Show when you sign up and get 20% off your first 3 months of management. Hey, welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Kim Carbo of Accessible Hope International. Kim, as we get back into the conversation, we've touched on like tangible things that we can do a little bit in the beginning of the conversation, but I want to zero in and focus on that as we wrap up this conversation. What are some specific spiritual disciplines that you guys recommend? What are some things that you guys may be testing out within your own teams, playing around with when you start thinking about your consultation work and helping other organizations do some of this? What does it look like for us to actually put some of this stuff into practice?
Yeah. I think one thing, this is not a practice, this is a mindset change. And I think it has to start there, is that we really do need to shift our mindset. Instead of, and even this is in how we talk with each other, right? Instead of praising long hours that people spend or heavy travel schedules or jammed up speaking engagements, we need to be asking hard questions of leaders. Like, when was your last sabbatical? Are you engaging regularly in Sabbath keeping? How much time do you have with your family each week? Are you disconnecting from your email and your work every evening? And if so, what time? Right? Like, if we were just to ask those questions of each other as leaders, just the asking itself starts to make people go, wait a minute, no, you know, and so it sparks some sort of maybe curiosity, maybe guilt, I don't know, maybe conviction around some of those practices that we already value. And then we need to start looking at how can we shift our mindset and instead start praising the qualities that really matter to the health of a leader, like taking an entire 24 hours. And I think sometimes we don't because we feel bad, right? Like if some leader says to me, I disconnect from my phone for 24 hours, like I don't answer any texts, I don't get on my email, I don't open my computer, I might want to be like, wow, that's amazing. Or I might be like, oh shoot, that probably is what I, you know, and then you just start like doing sort of this comparison thing. But I think if we start just like allowing each other to ask those questions of each other, like whether it's at ministry conferences or in gatherings of ministry leaders, like if those were the conversations we were engaging rather than like, what's your latest, greatest strategic plan framework, you know, whatever, I think things would start to shift. So I think one is a mindset shift. We've got to start valuing things differently. That's the first thing. Mm. And then in addition to the five practices that I already mentioned, I think we also need to talk about corporate practices. So those were really individual practices that I was mentioning earlier, those five in regard to sort of my life as a leader and what I need to be leaning into and valuing. But I think we also need to look at the culture of an organization and how practices are engaged corporately that will lend itself not only to a shift in mindset, but also to people beginning to incorporate some of those practices individually. If they're part of what we sort of, I don't want to use the word require because that feels like it feels very ruley, but if we do require them, right? If it's just part of what we do, and if you join our ministry, this is what you're going to do too. Then it just normalizes that whole conversation, right? So I'll give you a couple of examples. I think there's like four in particular that I would recommend that become corporate practices for any ministry. One is prayer. Obviously, if you're in ministry, you're praying, whatever, like you are going to probably start meetings with prayer or whatever. But I'm not talking about sort of the prayer that's like, you know, you write a letter, you throw a sticker on the back, like not that kind of prayer, but like prayer that's just integral to the process of doing work and ministry together. So regular, frequent, integrated prayer in your work week. So for our ministry, I've already said we're virtual. So we gather on Zoom every morning, daily for prayer. We spend 30 minutes in prayer together. Immediately after prayer, we do kind of a quick touch base if there's any specific things that people need to have questions answered or collaborate with somebody on or whatever. We do that every day. Except Friday, we let Friday just be sort of a little bit more of a, like not a hard start morning so that people kind of have some flexibility in their Fridays. We also do quarterly days of prayer where we take, so what we really are trying to teach ourselves, so I would say we're learning this still, is that the work, prayer is the work, right? So we don't pray mm-hmm. about the work, but that prayer is actually the work. That when we pray, God is moved by our prayers by some mysterious way. Like we don't know what that looks like, right? But we do know that God is moved by our prayers. God doesn't need our prayers, but God does allow himself to sort of work with our prayers to do the things that God does in the world. So that we're trying to teach ourselves that prayer is the work. And so we take an entire day every quarter where from 9 to 5, we just sit on Zoom together, unfortunately, and pray. And we break that up into, you know, we've got some specific ways that we sort of do that, but we spend the whole day just praying. And so that's something we do quarterly. Every month we get together with all of our global partners, again, on Zoom, and have prayer together with all of our global partners around the world. And our donors and everybody are invited to that as well. So, you know, it can be whoever wants to come. So that's just a few ways that we are trying to integrate prayer into what we do. And of course, you know, we have prayer at other times as well. Sabbaticals. So for in our ministry, sabbaticals are mandatory. And it's just an expectation. So we call them requisite. So because mandatory sounds so, you know, forceful. But requisite sabbaticals. So if you are with our ministry for 7 years, in your seventh year, you will have the gift of a sabbatical given to you for 3 months of paid sabbatical. So, and that's at every level. I mean, you could be the bookkeeper. It doesn't matter. Like whatever level of ministry you're at, that everyone gets a sabbatical in their seventh year. If you're with us another 7 years, you get another one. So every 7 years, you would get a sabbatical of 3 months or so. And that's just part of our rhythms. And we work with that together. It's a challenging process, but it's really been very beneficial for our ministry. Sabbath, getting everyone on board with shutting off work for 24 hours. That's a harder one, but also it's also leader-led, right? Because if I am emailing my staff on the Sabbath and maybe I'm not saying I expect a reply, right? Like I may not be saying, hey, I need you to reply to this. But if I'm emailing my staff on what we've considered to be our Sabbath, well, I'm not setting a very good example of withdrawing from my own work, right? So I think it's got to be led by the leader and modeled by the leader and then held, the space held, right, by the leader that it's sacred and that you also are invited to take this whole 24 hours and just not engage. Crises happen. There are emergencies. Sometimes, you know, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath, right? But so there are times right. when things have to be set aside. But for the most part, that's our rhythm. And then retreats. So we do bi-monthly retreat days where it's a day-long retreat. The only rules that we have around our retreat days, we take them all in the same time because that just allows us to sort of plan for it around our scheduling and that kind of thing. And then knowing that everyone is unavailable, right? But the only rules are you cannot work and you cannot sit around the house and substitute work at the house, like, you know, get your laundry done and get your, you know, do your whatever. That it has to be something that you have really asked the Lord, what are you inviting me to and how do you want to meet me and renew my soul in this day? So, you know, we've had people that have just gone to a park and sat all day reading a book or, you know, taking walks, going skiing because they love being in nature, you know, different things like that, but something that will renew their soul. Some people, you know, go to a monastery and do something very spiritual, you know, but sometimes it's not as sort of spiritual because we want to be holistic beings. So those are some practices that we've really integrated into our rhythms in our ministry. And hold very tightly too, because it's easy to let those slide. We just had another, I was in a meeting earlier today where somebody asked for a follow-up meeting and it was a group of six people and everybody had this one particular day available. And I was like, gee, I'm sorry, that's our staff retreat day. I can't do it on that day. And everybody's like, oh shoot. Okay. Well, you know, so it would have been easy to be like, oh shoot, that's when everybody can meet. I guess I'll meet too. Right. But really just marking that space off and saying, no, this is a retreat day and we're all taking retreat together, but separately. And then also retreat together as well, corporate retreats too. So we do that less frequently just because of the logistics of travel and, you know, we're not always together as often. But yeah, so those are just, I think, some of the ways that we've tried to lean into integrating formation into our daily rhythms and our weekly rhythms, our all the rhythms, right? Quarterly, annual, whatever it is, to make sure that we're setting apart that time and agreeing that we value it enough that we're going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously this takes a considerable amount of time to commit to this, but like you said at the beginning, budgetary allotment to make sure that these things are happening. How responsive are your donors to what you guys have started to do? Like, do you find that generally speaking, they're very receptive and want to invest in these kind of things, or is it, has it been difficult?
Such a good question. I don't think we've ever talked to our donors about this, which is now making me think that why haven't we, and maybe we should. But I think because we are virtual, so we don't, this doesn't take a lot of money for us. Like, we do pay for spiritual direction. Mm. That's a line item. We do have a reserve for sabbatical costs. Like, if people are taking sabbatical, just so that there's a little bit of money.
Well, even that, like the three month sabbatical every 7 years, like that's gotta be a big,
that is, investment. You're right. That's true. And, we haven't like really broadcasted that, I guess. Like, it's just sort of part of what we do internally. I mean, obviously our board is involved, but, I don't know that we've ever really broadcasted like, oh, this person is on sabbatical. Like, it might be on their email responder, you know, where they might put that on their email responder, but it's not like we put it in the newsletter. But that is a curious point. Like, I'm curious now, should we be making that more public? Again, it goes back to that whole idea of vulnerability, right? Like, I don't know, what are the donors going to say? Like, are they going to be like, what do you mean you're taking a sabbatical? Yeah, I don't know. I think we just haven't really.
I mean, ideally, you'd hope that they would be. You'd hope that donors would be receptive and would want to invest in that. Like, when we're talking long term health of the organization and the leadership and whether or not our leaders are going to burn out and or be mentally healthy, spiritually healthy, that should be something that donors would want to invest in, that financial partners would want to say, yeah, I would give to that, because at the end of the day, it's going to mean longevity of the organization, health of the long-term health of the organization. I just wonder, and I have not asked that question of other ministries that I know are starting to do some of this stuff. I know that like MedSend, for example, is an organization we've worked with. They've got this thing called the Longevity Project, trying to help keep missionaries on the field longer and not like you talked about, burn out and step away from the field because they've just been bombarded with trauma over and over and over again for the last decade.
Yep.
So these things are, and I know for them, they've got donors that are investing specifically into that.
That's kind of
specifically calling that out.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking as you're saying that, is that I think that this would be, you know, just like we don't necessarily tell our, like, we don't put our budget out to donors and be like, here, analyze every line item, you know, because that just doesn't go well.
Right.
And they just don't have enough information to be able to make a good analysis. I think likewise, there would be some donors that, you know, like if you were going to do a donor proposal about a particular project, you would be very strategic about, like, who is it that loves this kind of thing? Like, we know our major donors, mm-hmm. this one loves things about children. Okay, well, this project is about children. We'll talk to this donor about this project. I think in the same way, you would do the same thing with this. It wouldn't be something you just broadcast to everybody, but that you could approach specific donors and ask if they'd like to invest in the spiritual well-being of the team. I think that's a great idea. We have not done that yet, but I just made a note on my notepad to do that. Yeah. So that's good. I like that.
I mean, they treat it as an entire campaign. I mean,
sure.
It's something that they call out. They've got marketing copy and messaging specifically tailored to that project, landing pages for it, so that if I'm interested in learning more about it, I can go to that landing page and learn why this even exists within the organization and how can I be financially invested and partnered with it or pray for it. Mm-hmm. So they've created entire campaigns around it.
Yeah.
And it seems to be being received really well.
I love that.
I mean, I can't imagine there are too many donors that would say, oh yeah, that's not something that is worth investing in. Maybe, and that would be sad, but for the most part, you'd think that most people would be interested and willing to invest in something mm-hmm. like that, or at least know that some of my dollars that I gave to the organization are going to that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Kim, this has been wonderful. I've really enjoyed our conversation. If people want to get a hold of you, learn more about what you guys are doing with Accessible Hope, learn more about what you might be doing with some of your consulting stuff on this sport, spiritual formation, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, it's they could just email me. I'm happy to have a conversation with people once I get my website up, which I don't have right now, but that would be a way, but it's not ready yet. But right now, email would be the best way to get a hold of me. So it's just my email is just my name, Kim Cargbo with a G, K-A-R-G-B-O, at A-H-I-N-T, so accessiblehopeinternational.org, A-H-I-N-T.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And we'll put links to your website sure. as well in the show notes. So. Yeah, this has been great. Can I pray for you as we wrap up?
Thank you so much, Zach.
Yeah. Father, thank you for this conversation. Thank you for Kim and her insights and expertise and all the things that she's learned over the years that she was willing to share with us. I pray that you would bless her and her ministry and her team as they continue to pursue you and answer your call to serve the vulnerable and disabled, Lord. Thank you for this ministry and your invitation with all of us to partner with you in this redemptive story. And it's just always cool to see all the different ways in which that plays out in the ministry world. And so, yeah, just thank you for Kim and her team and ask for your blessing on them as they continue to pursue your call and seek your guidance, Lord. We love you. Thank you for all you do for us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Kim, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a great conversation. I took away some points too. So.
Awesome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Growth Show. If you've enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and review us on your favorite podcasting app and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story or expertise to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be a great guest for the show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at podcast@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry's story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org and book a call today. See you next time.